This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And as we mark the end of the regular season, what a week that was. Just 8 years after they returned from the National League, Luton Town are three games away from the Premier League. We'll talk all things Sky Bet Championship with one of the division's most experienced managers.
And this one you've been negotiating with over the last 24 hours is nearly there, is it? And who is it again?
I can't talk to you about that. I'll have to kill you.
Sunderland and Wycombe Wanderers are through to the final of the Skybet League One playoff final. And in Skybet League Two, talk about timing things to perfection. A 7-0 Bristol Rovers goal fest fires them for the first time this season into the automatic promotion places for the final 3 minutes of the campaign. We'll talk to a title winner in that division.
Such a lot of hard work has gone into us this season, and to finally be crowned as champions was a great moment for us.
It's the official EFL podcast. And I am delighted to say the Coventry City manager, Mark Robbins, is with us to look back on the 2021-22 Sky Bet Championship season to date. I'm almost tempted to continue an off-air chat about potential transfer signings, but I'll build up to that particular point, Robbo, I think. If we're looking at the division overall, just how competitive and challenging has it been this season?
It always is, and every season's different, clearly. Quarter of the teams come out or change. And this season's been really, really difficult. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You've got different challenges every week, different styles of play, managers changing, particularly in the Championship. So you've got that challenge. International breaks. You've got all sorts of those things to navigate. But yeah, it's been very, very tough. You've got some top teams in the division. You've got the discrepancy between the haves and have-nots and parachute payments. Teams that have been in this division for a while who've really had time to build and get squads together. And some really good footballing teams as well. So and that's evolving all the time. So very challenging and really enjoyable. The supporters are, you know, to play in those games is outstanding. The stadia are fantastic and always improving. The pitches and the playing surfaces are generally really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, having you on this week is kind of inspired by the fact that just to share it with anybody listening to the podcast this week, that I kind of rang you last week just to mark my card on the contenders going into the final weekend, because you get a different perspective, obviously, talking to a manager as opposed to a supporter watching. And what struck me in that chat, and we were on the phone for about 20 minutes, was the forensic knowledge you had of all those opposition teams. So you are constantly over a season having to update your own knowledge bank with, as you say, managerial changes, changes in momentum of form, whether positive or negative, you know, changes in whether somebody is fighting for relegation or finds themselves mid-table. I mean, you're constantly on it then, Mark.
Yeah, you can't afford not to be. I think, you know, you've got to have good staff around you. And our analyst department is too strong. I don't mean really strong. I mean two people working in it. But they're outstanding. You know, they work tirelessly to give me the data that's needed. And again, that constantly changes. You've got the games thick and fast. So the turnaround's really, really quick. And you've got to be, whilst you're preparing for one game, they're preparing for the next one after that and the one after that. And that's just a constant throughout the season. So, it's particularly challenging. And then obviously the coaching that goes on the back of that and the work that's done, AD Vivas, as you know, I've got, and Dennis Lawrence, and the two of those have been brilliant. This season and the last, with AD, been with him for nearly 5 years now. And he's a top coach. And Dennis came in this last summer and has been a brilliant addition. So, Yeah, you're always preparing for the different scenarios, the different teams, the different styles of play, how they press, where they press from, where they're likely to press from, what type of team they're likely to pick. Some of it you sort of, intuitively know what's going to happen, but a lot of it you sort of like, winging it a little bit because you don't know necessarily about the injuries that they might have or illnesses. Certainly in the last 2 seasons with COVID, it's been a little bit difficult because it wipes teams out and squads out from time to time. So you've had that extra challenge. But yeah, if it wasn't difficult enough, you have that as well to go with. So it's been a particularly challenging time for everybody, I think.
And as ambitious as you are, and I'm sure any Coventry City fan is, bearing in mind the journey you've been on since you returned and obviously picking them up in League Two, promotion from League One, you moved from 16th last season to finishing 12th this time around. Should we take that as a good marker of progress?
I think for us, 100%, we've been miles better than we were last season. We're a lot more competitive this. We've scored more goals. We've conceded less. We've used fewer players, but we've not got the hugest of squads. So that's something we've got to look at for next season because of the condensed league. It was 21 games to November the 12th, as you know. And then there's a 4-week break for the group stage games, and then we reconvene on the 10th of December. So you've packed in all those games plus cup games. So you need a squad capable of being robust enough to get through those games. But it's this season's been brilliant in terms of the support that we've had. I mean, we sold over 11,000 season tickets last year. We sold over 12,000 so far now, which is a marker. The supporters have been fantastic, backed the team brilliantly and backed myself and the staff brilliantly too. Things in that sense have changed markedly from when I walked through the door, that's for sure. And yeah, I think, for us, we've done the style of play's improved. We've sort of embedded that philosophy of the way that we want to work. But there's still lots to do, and still maybe tweaks that we can make to try and eke out those gains.
Well, there is a lot to do because you've been pretty busy since you walked off the pitch at the weekend, haven't you? You obviously, there's the nasty side of the game, having to tell certain players that they're going to be released. You're obviously a busy bee trying to look at your list of transfer targets. I mean, are you knackered, first of all? Are you absolutely exhausted after the season you've had? And then how do you find that extra depth of energy to already be planning what you're going to be doing in a couple of months' time?
Well, the short answer is no, I'm not absolutely knackered. I think the time when I felt really tired was when I got COVID just before we played Sheffield United a couple of months ago. And it's the first time I'd had it. Didn't know I was going to react to it, and I've had all the jabs that have been required. I felt like I'd just got a head cold until I started to go back to work, and then I felt absolutely shattered. And it's taken a while to sort of shake that off. That's the only time I think that I felt absolutely knackered, but I think it re-energizes you so that we've not got the games to prepare for at this moment in time. Obviously, you look forward to the work that you're doing. Sort of people that have left the club have needed to leave the club for themselves, for their own careers. Jody Jones, for instance, who it was a very difficult one to release Jody because he's been through the mill, as everybody knows. And if they don't know, he's had three cruciate knee ligament injuries that have been repaired now, and he's ready to go. He had a tidy up. There was a bit of a cartilage damage that's been tidied up, and now he's starting to move like he did before. But he needs to play. He needs to play regularly. He's missed too much football at 24 years of age. He's missed out on too much and enough football, so he needs to go and play. That was a difficult one. You've got that side of that to take care of, as you've mentioned. But the other side of it is trying to rebuild and add not only quality, but you know, robust players who can perform and try and take us to the next level or create more opportunities and or score more goals and defenders that are going to be, you know, of added value in terms of both the defensive side and the offensive side, because we want to attack. You know, we don't want to sit back. We want to try and attack. In the Championship, that can be difficult because they've got players there in the teams that can take the game away from you in the blink of an eye. You know, Mitrovic is one that springs to mind, although we did well against Fulham in both games. So they're top players in the division, so you've got to try and, like I say, eke out those games where you can. We've had a lot of conversation around the training facility for a number of years now where we want to try and move to a facility that's fit for purpose, really, or more fit for purpose than the one we're in at the moment. And so they've sort of not done anything in terms of the bare minimum has been done in the past, but they're laying a new pitch this year. So that's going to be really, really interesting because that gives us a proper surface to train on, the laser level surface with drainage and all that stuff that we've not had before. And that might come as a surprise to people, but that's just where it's been for a number of years. But things are starting to move forward. The owner's been really good because she's still trying to get more investment to give me a little bit more money to spend in different areas. And that's fantastic. And look, there's no promises there, but it's, again, the fact that they're trying to do it and trying to move it forward is a sign of obviously where we're trying to move to.
I do want to ask you, not necessarily in the case of somebody like Jody, whose story you've just described so brilliantly for us, but you know, when you are releasing players, do you ever have they got an inkling that it's coming, or do you occasionally get a player walks in your office where you really do have to break very bad news, where their perceptions of where the future lies is very different to your own?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's times
really
where
wow.
Yeah, times when that's happened, of course. Yeah, I think, and sometimes, you know, it's one of those things where there may have been something going on that you're gonna keep them, but then something changes. Whether that's a different player that you can acquire that makes things different for your team and takes it onto a different level. Whether that's because they've done something that means that they've stepped out of line, or it's, you know, and naturally it's moved on, or it's another team that's come for them. There's so many different reasons why that might happen, but generally, I mean, in fairness, I'm absolutely clear with them. You know, I'm always clear with them. So generally, they've got an inkling, or they say they've got an inkling, but it's never easy. It's always the most difficult part, I think, to sort of break bad news to people. But it's also part of what we have to do.
Well, I mean, it's part of the job of a leader, isn't it, to have to dispense difficult information as well as say nice things to people. Do you, just out of curiosity, and I'm not being mawkish here, and we're not picking on any one individual, but as soon as they walk in your office and shut the door, do you get, are you one of these guys that gets straight between the eyes with the money shot and tells them, or is there a preamble build up to it, or... Take us into that dynamic for a second, if you would.
So it really depends on the circumstances. It really does. I mean, you've got different circumstances. You've got different dynamics with different players, different personalities. I think it's. I think generally, I will try and give them that information, but also on the back of that, look to try and help where we can. You know, so it's not just there. You go off your pop. There's the door. It's not that. It's not that conversation. Not always, but I think that you've got to try and help them as well in the next step of the career, because they may not, especially the younger players, they will be looking around and go, where do I go from here? There's always a pathway for them to get back into the game in some capacity, whether it's playing. Sometimes we'll offer coaching qualifications. Sometimes there'll be another. Avenue they might want to go down or whatever, but there's always a pathway for them when they leave the club, and that's the academy is really, really good at that. Dan Bolas is the academy manager, who's doing a really good job in difficult circumstances, and you know, again, they try and do things in the right way all the time. Don't get it right all the time, nobody does, but you know, majority of the time, and he's a really good person that's striving to make things better.
And then conversely, just before you do give me your entire list of summer transfer targets, conversely, Robbo, when you are meeting a player for the first time, are you aware of the fact you need to be pitch perfect with tone from the very start? Or again, does that come down to personalities?
I think really you go with your honest view of them, the honest way you're going to, where they'll fit in, where they're going to play, what the plan is for them, and the reason why you're signing them, you know, understanding what we do, how we do it. A lot of the time, the players know exactly what we do, how we play, and that's one of the things that's got us to that point. So, I think generally, you know, it's been straightforward because that's the way I recruit, that's the way we've tried to do it, and we've had some success with that strategy. But again, it's not just a strategy; it's the truth. It's the honest approach where you say, you know, this is what's going to happen. This is, obviously you can't sort of say to them, you know, you're going to play 46 games. That's never going to happen. But ultimately, you know, this is where we see you fitting. This is what we think you can add, and this is where you can add it, and this is what you'll get. You know, in terms of the coaching, the development, because it is a development model. And AD and Dennis have been in that game for a long time. AD particularly in terms of the work he did at Chelsea for nearly a decade. It's really important to have somebody like that around to aid that development of the players, and they buy into that really, really quickly. The sessions are tough, but really enjoyable and are very, very different every day. So there's a lot of diverse sessions that he does. And it's good, you know, tempo's there and the players enjoy that.
Yeah, we should explain. I mean, AD was, as Mark says, part of the Chelsea development coaching team, then brought through, well, he had players like Tammy Abraham, Dom Solanke, just to name but a couple over the course of his time there at the club, didn't he? And finally on this, is your radar pretty good? Can you tell pretty accurately in a first meeting with a player whether you've got them on the hook? And can you also tell the ones that might be stringing you along because they've got a few other clubs and they're looking for the best option?
I think you can tell. I do think you can tell. I think it's part of the course. You've got players that want to see what's out there for them. I think it's great to be wanted or to feel wanted at that young age. They're sort of trying to see what's going to be the best place for them. But, you know, really, ultimately, we've been pretty successful with what we've tried to do and pursued the ones that we know. And obviously in the Championship, it's very, very difficult. You're swimming in the same pool as quite a few others. But you've got, there are certain things that swing in our favour, but then there's some things that aren't. So you've got to try and make the best of it. But like I say, we know where we are, we know what we are, and we just try and go for it.
Yeah, and this one you've been negotiating with over the last 24 hours is nearly there, is it? And who is it again?
I can't talk to you about that. I'd have to kill you.
Yeah, I know you would. Of course you would. But I thought it was worth another little tickle. Listen, you kindly agreed just to repeat that conversation we had on the telephone to some extent. I mean, first of all, Fulham and Bournemouth, unquestionably the two quality teams in the division.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bournemouth were a little bit unfortunate last season with the quality of players they've got, and the players that they lost, in fairness. But they've still left with Dan Juma going. You know, Dan Juma leaving to go to Villarreal, he was a big loss for them because he weighed in with a lot of goals. But the way they play, they can cut through you at will. You mentioned Dominic Solanke, who's been outstanding for them. But Philip Billing, I had Philip Billing as a young kid at Huddersfield before he went there. And he's added goals, he's added energy and drive from the midfield. But you can go through the whole side. They're absolutely outstanding. Jefferson Lerma's in there. And, you know, you've got Kelly at the back that's just like a Rolls Royce. And the job that he's done, Scott, there is phenomenal. And obviously to get two promotions in a short space of time is absolutely outstanding. So he'll want to go one better, I suppose, in the Premier League next year and establish them or re-establish them in the Premier League. Fulham have been a different animal, and with Mitrovic in there, you know, they couldn't fail to score goals. Obviously, he's scored inordinate amount of goals, 43, I think it was, 44.
I mean, it's proper old school, isn't it? It's like we're going back to the Stanley Matthews era to be ramping that lot in. With the greatest respect to Guy Whittingham, whose record he broke and we had on recently. I mean, it's a ridiculous amount of goals, Mark.
It's incredible, incredible. And he was like hitting granite. So, you know, he heads the ball harder than some players can shoot. You know, it's just ridiculous. And his movement in the box, and the way that he uses his body to keep people away from him, and the strength that he has, the technique that he exhibits is just unbelievable. I remember two goals he scored against Swansea, where he's made unbelievable runs across the defender, and he just touched the ball and felt the ball into the corner of the net. And other times he powers things into the back of the net, but he's a really, really good finisher, smart finisher. And that's just him. They've got a brilliant squad. And they played some really, really good, attractive, entertaining football. So those two were the best teams by a country mile, really, in terms of the way that they played. But in terms of how you set up against them, it was really difficult to do. And we found it difficult against Bournemouth because we drew 2-2 down there. But Lerma got sent off early on. They were 2-0 up in that game, although it wasn't like that. It wasn't a 2-0 game at that stage, but they... You know, they can do that to you. We were 2-0 down and we got ourselves back in to the game and then scored right at the death to equalise. And in the home game, we lost 3-0. And again, it wasn't that type of game. It wasn't a 3-0 game. We could have easily been level or in front in that game. We played really well, actually, but lost 3-0. And that's just the symptom of the quality of Bournemouth.
We're heading into the playoffs. Just whip us through the playoff contenders. I mean, Huddersfield, 6 wins out of their last 7, only lost twice in their last 26 matches. Because of Forest run, do you think they've been a little bit under the radar and haven't had the kudos and respect that they deserve for form like that?
I think potentially that's right. I think the other factor in that is that Steve Cooper came in later on and Forest were rock bottom or down in the bottom three. And he came in and he's transformed them into a top three team. You know, I think that the players that he brought in January were absolutely outstanding. We've spoken about that, you know, with Keenan Davies coming, although he's been injured. He transformed them with Brennan Johnson off that right-hand side. Zinchenko started to play and started to flow and function in that team as well. And defensively, they're very strong, really strong. Worrell, Figueiredo, obviously I mentioned Steve Cook before. McKenna in the back line as well. And then with Jed Spence, who's been a revelation for them this season. They're a real attacking threat, and they attack with pace. We mentioned James Garner and obviously with Yates in the middle of the park as well, who complement each other brilliantly. They attack really well, but they create good chances, but they dig when it matters as well. You know, they can fight. So Forest have been phenomenal. Huddersfield obviously play a different type of football, a different brand of football. They can play, there's no doubt about it, but they've chosen to sort of sit deeper and play on a counter-attack with real pace. And when they go, they really can go. And they've managed to find a winning formula from that tactic. But also, you know, you've got some really good players that have come through there. You know, the signing of Sauber Thomas from Boreham Wood is a masterstroke, really. I think Tom Lees, you know, has sort of galvanised their defence. Levi Colville from Chelsea is just, for an 18-year-old, has been phenomenal. I mean, he's built like a man mountain. And has defended brilliantly. He's played brilliantly, and with Harry Toffolo off that left, I think scored something like 5 in 6 games now. That, you know, he's got loads and loads of confidence going into the playoffs. Danny Ward, who I had at Huddersfield, who's weighed in with a lot of goals, and obviously they've got Jordan Rhodes there, who's filled in for him admirably while he was out through injury. But it's they've played a really interesting brand of football because, like I say, with them playing deep, they make sure there's no gaps between the units, but also they put you under pressure and they start to go. And as they start to move forward, if you miss the pass and the ball gets won, they're straight off the back of you really quickly and they can finish.
Yeah. I this is a wonderful insight, and I hope listeners can appreciate that this is why I'm getting you to repeat that telephone call we had last week, because you're pointing stuff out to us that probably we wouldn't see because we watched games in a different way as supporters. Sheffield United, I mean, you know, I think their clean sheets record since Paul Heckingbottom came in or returned for this second spell. Yeah, more clean sheets than any other side since he retook the reins. But you also feel that they've restored a lot of the central tenets of the Chris Wilder era too.
Yeah, 100%. I think things, when you try and change things, especially when they've been deeply embedded in them for the, and they've had the success that they've had over the last few years under Chris from League One through to the Premier League, and then having the two seasons in the Premier League, and then obviously with Slavisa coming in and trying to change things and went to a 4-3-3, he then went back to the three at the back, but it was played slightly differently. I think with Eki coming in, I think he's obviously gone back to what they know, which is smart, you know, really smart. And with the fact that you've got Billy Sharp there, who is their talisman, he's again weighed in with a lot of goals for them. But also there's the belief started to grow because they've started to win games again. Morgan Gibbs-White in that front line as well is, or just off the front, has been a revelation for them, a really top player in the making. And, you know, they've got some real quality. But all those players that have played in the Premier League would have looked round and thought, you know, what's going on? This isn't in the script. We should be going back straight up. And potentially now they can do because they'll have the belief. Although you think Forest and the run that they've been on and they're capable of doing anything on, but a one-off game against a side like Sheffield United who've just been in the Premier League, who've come down and started to get a little bit of momentum themselves, and that belief coming back, I think that, you know, those are the two, in my opinion, that they've got the biggest chance.
Although we should pay huge kudos to Luton Town. Let's just remind people, 13 years ago, tumbled out of the Football League with a ginormous couple of points deduction, spent 5 years in the non-leagues, only came back up 8 seasons ago, and now stand 3 games away from the Premier League. It is remarkable and would probably be right up there with Leicester City winning the Premier League if they were to make the Premier League themselves, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it, Mark?
Incredible. It's an incredible job that Nathan Jones has done, without a shadow of a doubt. And just to put some context on that, all those years ago when Mick Harford was managing Luton, at that point they had a minus 30 points deduction. Yeah. We had at Rotherham minus 17. And Eddie Howe's Bournemouth had minus 17 in the same season. Yeah. We managed to survive both, but there was no way. I mean, there was no way that Mick could have turned the 30 points on. It was just too many, even in the bottom league, bottom division. And I think they won the Checker Trade or the EFL Trophy. I think they won that, or they certainly got to the final in that.
They did in that season. Yeah, they did.
They had a really good, there's a good fact for you then. they have been phenomenal, and we were in League Two with them and they got promoted. We got promoted the year afterwards. And then they got promoted again. I think, was it immediately? But it's not long afterwards. I think it might have been bounced straight up into the Championship. And we went up the year after that. And they've just continued to build, and they do it in a different way again. They'll put you under pressure at home. Their home form is really strong, or their home performances are really strong. The crowd that pack into Kenilworth Road and really get behind the side make it difficult. And the style of play, their energy, the way that they come after you and really press you in that final third, and they'll put the ball in behind you and keep doing it and make you turn to face your own goal. Set plays, they're inventive, they've got no real stars in the side, but they've got some top players in there that really perform at the level. Not scared of anybody, you know, they'll go toe-to-toe with everybody and they'll fight you and sometimes try and beat you up. But they can play, you know, there's different ways he can do things. So he's put a really solid good squad together, along with Mick and Paul Hart, you know, and his staff. I think they've really, yeah, certainly outperformed.
Yeah. It's a very homely setup, actually. They've got Chris Cohen, who Nathan Jones was with down at Yeovil as a player. They've elevated Alan Sheehan, former Luton player, up to being one of the coaches as well. So they hold it all together. What a wonderful insight. Somerwell, are you going to share who that player is you're about to sign or not? One more chance to tell us.
No. You'll have to find out later on. Look, I don't divulge anything. And also, it's bad luck to do that. So... and bad form, actually. So, no, we're not doing that. Unfortunately.
He's just given me a look, folks, that says, don't ask that question again. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
No worries, pal. Thank you. Anytime.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Now, at this point, I do need to tell you that the following interview was recorded before the news that Rob Edwards had left Forest Green Rovers to take over as the new manager of Watford. My, oh my, do Forest Green Rovers know how to wring out the emotions. At one stage, the EFL's outstanding team for the first two-thirds of the campaign looked set to be promoted by the third week in March. In the end, it was a month later, and by the penultimate weekend of the season, it looked like they were going to surrender the Sky Bet League Two title, only to snatch it back. On the final day, we can talk to Captain Jamil Matt, who's also a psychology graduate, which rather begs the question, Jamil, have you analysed yourself and your teammates about that topsy-turvy end to your season?
To be honest, I think that would take me way too long to be able to do that, to delve into some of the minds in around the club. But no, it's a great bunch of lads. And the main thing for us is obviously we went up as we got promoted, and obviously even better to do it as champions. And with the drama in the last game, in the last 20 minutes of the game and the last 10 minutes of the game, I think it was probably not a better way to do it, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I mean, you look remarkably fresh, but I know that bang on the final whistle, when a mighty goal has been achieved, it can be quite a draining experience. Have you literally kind of put your feet up for the last couple of days, because we're talking to you, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 days after that final whistle? Have you rested a little bit?
I think today's the first day I've not had a drink, to be honest. So today this is, I'm drinking a bit of coffee.
Okay.
And that's replaced probably a bit of vodka and stuff. But no, we enjoyed it. And to be honest, after the final whistle, our first memories, I remember all the lads running towards a crowd and got a little bit emotional, to be honest, a lot of emotion. And I think that was down to just all the hard work that we've put in this season. I think Josh March, I've got to give a big mention to him, because he obviously scored the goal to confirm us as champions. And March is the hardest working lad I think you'll come across, and probably not played as many games as he's wanted to this season. But, you know, I think no one could have denied him that moment. I think the moment was perfect, because he's known as the guy that's made us champion. So yeah, it was an emotional moment, but it's because of such a lot of hard work has gone into us this season, and to finally to be crowned as champions was a great moment for us.
Yeah, I wonder whether from a personal point of view as well. I mean, it kind of the emotions I mentioned over the sort of two thirds of the season v last third comparison at Forest Green. When I think about your career as well. So topsy-turvy in League Two promotion races, because obviously promoted with Fleetwood in the playoff final, but then missed out with Blackwell, kind of around the squad, but you had your injury, didn't you? And then obviously missing out in the playoffs last season with Forest Green. I mean, it's you've had the ups and downs of the end of the season as well in this division.
Yeah, missed out with Plymouth as well in the playoffs.
Oh, blimey, sorry, of course.
So another one. So of course, yeah, I've had, to be honest, all those things you mentioned were through the playoffs, and I've had my fair share of experiences, you know, good and bad with League Two promotion races, but this is definitely the best one. You know, it's extra few weeks off, of course, and not having to go through the heartache of, or, you know, elation of the playoffs, but I've had fair share of experiences, but you know, to do it this way with this group of lads and to be champions is a fantastic feeling and something I'm going to cherish.
I've got the stats here that just kind of underline what I said. Won 19 of your first 29 and then four of your last 17. I mean, does that prove there's a big difference between getting there, but staying there takes a completely different mentality?
Well, I'm going to say that bad run of form probably came when you came to the training ground, Clem, so I'm going to blame you a little bit.
you had lost the week before I turned up.
Don't get defensive. Yeah,
I do because the amount sometimes when it gets to the sort of cutting edge point of the season, I have to sing for me supper. Sometimes I'm put on the kind of speakerphone in the manager's office and right, where have you been recently and did they win after you visited? So we're knocking that one down, Jamil, for starters.
Oh no, I'm obviously just winding you up there, Clem. But it's one of those things. I think, like you said, when you are at the top, you notice teams. You're there to be shot at, and every team wants to beat you. Then we obviously were on a fantastic run, having lost many games, and because of that, like I said, teams were coming in with maybe every game they were raising their game. To every team were raising their games against us to try to be able to beat us and probably saw us as a scout. So obviously it does get tougher. And I think a lot of players that obviously played, we've got the biggest squad in the league, probably used, I think, the most amount of players in the league throughout the season. So I think all of that, the culmination, you know, probably maybe took its toll a little bit, or, you know, it's when you, like I said, we have to have everyone shooting at you. So we can't put our finger on it for exactly what reason it was we maybe hit the skids or didn't have as great a run towards the end of the season, but we can only guess. But the fact of the matter is we were in the position we were for a reason as well, because we were that good for the first half of the season and the first two thirds of the season, should I say. So I think we thoroughly deserved to be where we were at, and you know, we got enough to get over the line in the end.
Did it get very messy the 24 hours after you got the title secured? Did you stay out all night? Were you together with the boys, or were you together with your family, or the boys and their families? Paint a little picture for us without incriminating yourself, Jamil, obviously.
Nah, a little bit of everything, to be honest. The first night we hadn't planned anything, to be honest, because, you know, Exeter were probably favourites. Started the Saturday, obviously, ahead of us. But once that final whistle went and the boys had a few buds, it was like, where are we going tonight then? And yeah, we all ended up out together on a Saturday night. And then there was a couple of us, myself, Jordan Moore Taylor and Don Bernard, we had a civic reception in Stroud to commemorate our promotion and being champions. So we met, I think it was at 12:30, where the rest of the boys met up again. So a few drinks during the day. So yeah, we probably had about 3-4 hours sleep from Saturday night to Sunday day when we were back meeting up, celebrating again. And then in the Sunday evening, the chairman put on a do with all the staff, all the players' families, all that could make it. And yeah, we definitely enjoyed the moment. It's something that's going to live long in the memory. I think you obviously enjoy the game and winning it on the pitch. Sometimes the nights out are the best memories that you remember. As well. So yeah, it was a great weekend, one of the best weekends of my life for sure.
And thoroughly deserved, I have to say. I mentioned your interest in psychology, and obviously this was around in the days before you kind of really got going on the professional ladder with Kidderminster. Is this something you want to pursue going forward?
Yeah, it's something I've toyed with, I think, on and off during my career, and whether I wanted to do it or can't say, I still feel like I've got a lot more years left in me, to be honest, Clem.
I'm not writing you off, mate.
No.
But there's a lot of players wait for the cliff edge and then start to think about what happens after football. Whereas at least I goes, at the risk of sounding like your mum, at least you've got a backup plan. You've got a proper job to turn to.
Yeah, it's good. It's another option, isn't it, to be able to look at. Not everyone has got that. I'm aware of that. But I think because of my route into football, like you said, I wasn't in the academy. I came into football a little bit later. Obviously, I had the psychology degree behind me. But it's not something I've made a definitive decision on yet, whether I'll go into psychology in after football. But it's something, I think it's another option, obviously, for me, which is nice. But I thought I like to do all the things as well. I like to be prepared So yeah, we'll leave that one for a few more years yet.
Yeah, has it helped you in your professional football career? Do you think has it given you a slightly different perspective on the game to the teammates you've played alongside?
Definitely, I would say so. It's given me a lot more perspective on things, and I like to look at things in a bigger perspective and a wider perspective. I think sometimes we can be caught so much into a little event that's happened, or for example, we're going through a bad run. You know, we hadn't won in seven, I think it was. But then if you flip that, we'd lost four or three in 20 odd games. So I'd like to look at it the other way, because we weren't losing many games. We just maybe weren't winning as many as we were previously. So that side of it is definitely I've used. And empathy is another thing I think is massive in counseling psychology, especially being able to empathise. And I think that's a massive side of football, is being able to, you know, sometimes we see just the player and what they're doing on the pitch, but we don't tend to look at the bigger picture and what might be going on in their home life and what may be going on in their life. And, you know, that's something I think is definitely, that side of it, of the psychology, has definitely helped me in my career.
And I guess a real asset for a captain as well, who might just want to look at why somebody's got bad body language in the changing rooms and have a little quiet word and say, is everything okay? Do you want to talk about it? Kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. It is a good asset to have. But, you know, my teammates are fantastic, and I can call every single one of them my friend first and foremost. And they're exactly the same. If someone might seem a little bit down, I'm sure they'll be getting either 20 odd lads asking them how they're doing, or 20 odd lads messaging them and saying how you're doing, you know. And there's a testament to that, because it was similar, like, for example, when I had my injury last year, and a lot of the boys obviously were here from last season, every single lad messaged me, asked, you know, how you doing, how you feeling, and kept in touch that way. And similarly, this year, it was similar with Matty when he got his injury, he was saying the same thing. So it shows, you know, it's a real tight togetherness amongst us. And I think that, you know, drove us on and kept us and got us to achieve what we achieved.
And we should talk about the club as well. I mean, it's been some rise. You are going to be the smallest ever club playing in the third tier. I mean, I'm truly looking forward to the prospect of some of those. Well, I'm not looking. I don't wish Sheffield Wednesday, for example, any ill, because they will be in League One next season. But there's going to be some big clubs turning up in Nailsworth next season.
Yeah, and that's another thing. You know, that's such a brilliant feeling for us as a group of players to be the ones that are able to bring these clubs to Nailsworth. And it's something for them to dream about, and something for them to, you know, they probably never thought would happen. But that's credit to, like you said, the club, the chairman, the director of football, all the staff that have brought League One football to the club, and it's a fantastic achievement for the club.
Jamil, just put into words for us the size of this achievement and what you and the manager and the boys have done.
Massive. It's history. It's history, isn't it, for the club? They've never been to the third tier before, never been champions in the Football League before. And for a lot of the boys, none of us have ever been champions before. It's massive. It's massive for the club. It's massive for us as players. I've mentioned it, and a few of us have mentioned it. We're all bound together now as a group of players that have achieved that. And that's whether we go our separate ways or whether we see each other play against each other in the future, you know, we're all bonded by what we've achieved together. So it's just fantastic. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it and you know, making the most of it.
I wonder as well, the biggest sort of compliment to pay you all as players and managers and coaches is that, as brilliant as all the stuff off the field is and the green credentials and leading the way, actually, on a lot of occasions this season, it has not come up. It has been deeds on the field, which is massively down to you guys.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, credit to the staff, the manager himself. We went away to Loughborough for pre-season training camp, and if that was the goal, was to go back and obviously reveal that now we're talking as champions. And, you know, the gaffer instilled that belief into us, because maybe not everyone at the time believed, you know, we knew we had a great team and a great group of players. Probably didn't fully believe we'd go up as, you know, champions. And every game we won, and the belief went up and up and up. And the position we found ourselves on was unbelievable, obviously, with you know, the group of players. So yeah, it's just a fantastic achievement and something that we're thoroughly enjoying, for sure.
Well, listen, continue to enjoy. We appreciate you sobering up enough to talk to us. You've got about 6 weeks off now, haven't you? When are you due back? Have you been given a date at this point?
Yeah, I think it's towards the end of June, around the 22nd-ish, I think, of June, we'll be back in, ready to go again. But I think the boys have, you know, earned their rest now and a long-earned rest. So yeah, we're looking to recharge our batteries, but ready to go again and attack League One.
Yeah, that's a lovely feeling as well, isn't it? As much as you all love football, it is very immersive. It is exhausting, the sort of routine. Must be very nice to know you can get up for the next few weeks without necessarily having anything to do other than bits and pieces you and the missus have put in place. You can sort out the little jobs around the house, go and lie on a beach or whatever. What are you going to do? Are you going on holiday quite soon?
I'll have little breaks, I think. Headed out to West Wales over the weekend, but then I think I'll head away in June. I went on holiday, so it doesn't wear off, you know. Try and get a holiday later, so it doesn't wear off by the time I come back into training. But yeah, to be honest, football is a creature's habit, aren't we? So I no doubt I'm looking forward to the rest, but I no doubt next week as well I'll be like, miss the lads, miss training. But I'm looking forward to the rest and you know, be able to just switch off for a little bit, watch a bit of football rather than playing it, and get the body in and the mind in the right frame and shape to go again.
Many congratulations to you and the boys on your magnificent achievement. Enjoy the summer.
Cheers, Glenn. Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Jamil, Matt and to Mark Robbins. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.